It's my pleasure to welcome back Jim Drever, former Sebastopol resident and friend Jim Drever, and now resident, is it Santa Monica or L.A.?
I can't Venice. Next to Santa Monica.
Venice, okay. Neither of the above. But he has a new book, End Your Story, Begin Your Life, which you see here, and I dare say he will be telling us something about
it. Can you pass me a copy of that book? Yeah,
absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely. So, without further ado, Jim Drever.
Thank you. Life begins with a breath, a deep in-breath, and it ends with a deep out-breath. Okay. In between, the first in-breath as a baby, and the last out-breath, hopefully as an aging adult. Hey, Phil and Julia.
Popular guy. Don't have a gun, no place to sit.
Oh, we got two seats at the back there. Thank you for coming. Well, as I was saying, life begins with the first in-breath and ends with the last out-breath. In between is our life. And I teach consciousness of freedom. I teach people how to be free so your life can flow, so you can enjoy your life. That's the goal, to enjoy living, to enjoy the highest quality of life you can. And what gets in the way of enjoying our life is our attachment to our stories, our beliefs, our thoughts. And the attachment or identification with our beliefs and stories in our head creates the emotional reactions in our body. And this is all in the book here. So the title of the book, End Your Story, Begin Your Life, is all about seeing you're not your story. We have stories. We are, as I say in the book, the teaching itself is simple. It is to grasp that while we are storytelling people, the stories we tell come and go. They change. But we, in our essence, are always here. So awakening, or freedom, or enlightenment, or self-realization is realizing your essential self, your true nature. And your true nature, I can tell you what that is right now. It is the pure consciousness, the pure awareness, the pure beingness that is present right now, in this very moment. Only this very moment exists, in fact. Only this moment, this timeless, unfolding, ever-expanding moment. When you realize that, and yet you still have stories, you still have thoughts, but now you know you're not your thoughts. As I say in the book, the freer you are of your story, the better storyteller you become. The freer you are of your story, the more fun it is to tell your stories, including stories that were once a source of so much suffering for you. But now you're free of them. You can tell them and use them as lessons for others, to guide others to freedom. So freedom is realizing yourself as consciousness, awareness, in this very moment now. And we honor the past, the stories of the past. We keep an eye on the future, goals and dreams, but we live right here, right now, in this very moment. And to realize your true nature is to realize this is it. There's nowhere else but here. And if all human beings were connected to this moment, here, now, we'd see a peaceful, dynamic, vibrant, creative world. But as it is, we've got people who identify with their stories. Their Islamic story, their fundamentalist story, whatever the story is that takes them out of reality and into their head, into their ideas, into their ideology. So this is a book about getting free of ideology. And then you can write a new story for your life. In fact, the last chapter of the book is titled Creating a New Story for Your Life. A story that is rich and vibrant and flowing, creative, and it's an never-ending story. And each one of us, every one of us, either welcome. Every one of us is this presence, this awareness. We are all one. We're all fundamentally of the one consciousness. And that's a big part of this realization of awakening, is to realize we are each a manifestation of the one consciousness. In our very essence, the core of our being, we're all the same, we're all one. And we manifest in our bodies, minds, and personalities as very different people. And that's the beauty of life. That's joy of life. To honor your unique manifestation, your unique gift, your unique talent. But always to know that underneath you are one. Every man is your brother, every woman is your sister. And every living thing is related, because animals, birds, plants, every living thing has the same consciousness. We are one. So when you realize your oneness with consciousness, you love animals, you don't mistreat them. You see a little bird and you honor it. I remember once I was traveling in Jaipur, India, with the woman who became the mother of my son, who is now 25. It was a long time ago. And we went to the zoo in Jaipur. It's a pretty run-down zoo. Indian zoos always seem to be pretty shabby and run down. And we walked in and walked into the bird sanctuary. And there's this funny looking bird there. It was standing on two long legs, had a short, tubby body and a big beak, and it was an adjutant stork. And I looked at that bird and I kind of looked at it and I said, thought to myself, wow, what a weird bird. And suddenly it looked back at me. I connected with its eyes. And I swore it said to me, I know, I may look weird, but I'm in here. And that was a revelation for me. So the realization of oneness is at the heart of my teaching. If all teachings, all true spiritual teachings, Buddhist, Christian, Islamic, Hindu, whatever, all have the point to the realization of oneness. I am you and you are me. Jesus said, love one another. The Upanishad said, you are that. Love one another because the other you love is yourself. But I'm just an ordinary guy, too. I love to dance in the world and play and live a normal life. So I call myself a marketplace teacher. There are mountaintop teachers and marketplace teachers, and variations in between. Mountaintop teacher, a good example of that would be Ramana Maharshi, or the Buddha was a mountaintop teacher. But I'm a marketplace teacher. I'm just a regular guy in the marketplace, but I love to share this message with people. And that's why I wrote this book. The subtitle is Mastering the Practice of Freedom. So how you master the practice of freedom, how you get to the realization of oneness, is you do the practice. The very simple practice I've developed over many years, which came out of actually where Richard Kapatia, my friend, and I were hanging out one day 4 years ago. And the practice came to me in its kind of three-step form. Now, I've revised it many times since, and it's kind of honed it and lasered, worked with a laser and kind of focused it. And now it's in this book. And it's a simple three-step practice to help you embody the realization of oneness, to help you embody the freedom you are, the freedom that is your birthright, that it's everyone's birthright. And the practice is this. Whenever you're suffering, whenever you're upset, whenever you're in conflict, whenever your buttons are pushed by somebody else or imaginary buttons, you learn, the first step, you learn to be present with it. Just be present with your suffering. That's the first step. You've got to be train yourself. It takes time to master this process, but you've got to be present with your suffering. And straight away, that takes 50-80% of the energy off it, because you're no longer resisting what is. And the main cause of suffering is resisting what is. Resisting through being attached to or identified with a story, a thought of some kind. Now, I talk in the book about welcoming. As you go deeper onto this journey of freedom, you actually learn to welcome your suffering, because it's showing you where you're not yet free. And you want to be free of suffering. The Buddha said that enlightenment was a freedom from suffering. So I actually, in the year before I woke up to the realization of oneness within me, I'm the one with everything. I use this mantra whenever I would suffer, and I didn't suffer very often because I was getting freer and freer. I'd been on this journey for 20 years. I was getting freer and freer. And this last year I would say to myself, I welcome this situation, whatever that was causing me suffering, is showing me where I'm not yet free. Because I wanted to be free. I desperately wanted to be free. That's the first step, to welcome it, or at least be present with it. Second step, notice the story you're telling yourself. Notice the thought. Behind all suffering, behind all angst, behind all insecurity, there is a thought, a story, a belief you have. You tell yourself. Just notice it. You don't have to go into your head, just notice it. Wow, I'm getting caught up in that story again. And then step number three, see the truth. The thought of story comes and goes. Just like the sensations and feelings of suffering come and go. But you are the awareness that is always present. So breathe deeply, relax, and be present as the awareness you are. Feel the sensations in your body, how they come and they go, but you are still always here. You recognize, you understand, you know the sensations and feelings in your body coming and going. You are what watches them. You are the witness of them. Listen to the sounds in the room. That helps you become more present. In this room now, the sound of my voice rising out of stillness and dissolving back into stillness. The sound of the traffic outside. The refrigerator, whatever it is back there, the appliance. All these sounds come and go within the awareness we are. That's it. If you do this practice, every time you suffer, you will get freer and freer. I've seen it many, many times. People who undertake this practice, it's very simple. You just do it, you do the practice, and gradually you become freer. You begin to realize, wow, I'm always here. I'm always present. My suffering comes and goes, but I'm always here. I as the witness, the awareness behind everything. And that's the great freedom. That's the great realization. Wow, I am this awareness. I'm always here. And when you completely know yourself as awareness or consciousness or presence, always here, then you're free. And then you can live your life. I love the Zen saying, which is in the book, after enlightenment, nothing changes, but everything is somehow different. What's different? What's different is that nothing changes in the sense that we still have our normal lives. We still have our relationships. We still have our jobs. We still have our bodies. We're still the same being. But now we see with total clarity. Now we know that we're not our thoughts or stories. We are the awareness behind everything. It is always present. Just relax and breathe into the awareness you are. And then from this place of being very aware and present, you act, you do. You do what you need to do, what you want to do, and what you love to do. Action flows out of being. Or as the Tao Te Ching says, the way to do is to be. So you've got to first master being. As you become a master of being, then doing happens more easily and effortlessly in your life. And things come to you. And it doesn't feel really as if you're doing anything, that it's life just unfolds all around you. Like this book was a 10-year process. It took me 10 years to write this book, interrupted in the middle by had these three strokes which really turned my life upside down. Mary was there nursing me back to health, and thank you. What was that? And but I was awake to my true nature before the strokes happened. In fact, I'll read you a section of the book from the beginning of the introduction. So I'm talking about my seeking coming to an end. I finally realized, in the spring of 1995, my seeking came to an end. I finally realized my true nature, I mean, had been at peace, free of conflict and suffering ever since. The main elements of my own story, the story of how I came to the understanding that are not my story, are in this book. However, I will relate one key story now. Between September 2003 and the end of January 2004, I experienced a health crisis which literally turned my life upside down. I had three strokes, each worse than the last. The third stroke landed me in the hospital for 6 days for intensive care. When I came out, I couldn't move the right side of my face. My right arm and hand were severely impaired. I walked with a limp on my right side. I had difficulty thinking and speaking. It took me almost 2 years to recover. Soon after the strokes, a few people who didn't know me very well said things like, "Gosh, it must have been really scary for you," or "You must have been terrified." But the truth was, I wasn't afraid. After all, I'd already realized my true nature. I knew myself as pure consciousness that was not born and does not die. When you live knowingly as the awareness you are, the fear and other emotions cannot touch you other than momentarily. You just flow with whatever is happening. As I see it, this is a litmus test of our freedom, how we deal with life's challenges and changes. I'm sure you're all dealing with some kind of change right now. Most people are. Life is an endless process of change. The more unconscious and unaware we are, the more such challenges will cause us to spiral downward into fear, unhappiness, depression, despair, suffering, and misery. Sounds horrible, doesn't it? But the more conscious and aware we are, the more we will discern the difference between real and imaginary challenges. From this place of clarity and present time awareness, we deal with whatever actual challenge may be confronting us, meeting it calmly and confidently with wisdom and love. Whether it's a relationship issue, a work problem, a financial struggle, a health crisis, a natural disaster unfolding, or a terrorist act in the making, we draw upon all the creative powers at our disposal to address it. We stay with it and respond to its call for as long as we need to. So that's why I wrote the book. I wrote it as a guide to becoming free and to being who you really are, to being the beautiful, powerful, creative person each of you is, to express your creativity in your unique way. And and feel the pregnant feel of possibility here. We are turned into the field of possibility, potential. And the freer we are of our story, our thoughts, our beliefs, the more we're turned into this field. And then we act from this. We act. We take action. And then we have the results we have. But we're not attached to the results, because our wholeness, our fullness comes from being itself, from being here now, and the fullness of the now moment. Now, when people are not awake to ideas of freedom, when they're really identified with their story, they are always in a state of doing, being, and having. They do what they think they need to do to have the results they need to have in order to allow them to be happy. And unfortunately, that doesn't work, because results are always changing, conditions are always changing, circumstances are always changing. When people are reliant on circumstances for their well-being, they're very uneasy when those circumstances start to change, which is the source of suffering and conflict. But when you embark on the path of freedom, inner freedom, and you begin to see that you're not your story, you begin to access a deeper level of well-being which doesn't depend on any condition, your true well-being. As I say in the book, you dive into the well of your own being and discover the source of well-being. It's all within you. I'm doing this workshop tomorrow at Jenna Inn. It's $50 for the day from 10 till 5, 10 a.m. till 5 p.m. And if you want to sign up for it, just show up at Jenna for 10 a.m. Jenna out on the coast, mouth of the Russian River. And we're welcome you there. I think we've got about a dozen people coming. There's room for more. And we'll just go deeply into this exploration of our stories. We'll do specific processes for uncovering the stories we're still identified with. That's what frees us, realizing, wow, I was really identified with that story. Freedom is simply being not identified with any story. I'm not identified with any story about anything. Even about being free. I'm just here, present. I have a story. I have a name, Jim Driever, but I'm not identified with my name. My identification comes from being itself. This flow and fullness of being that's expressing through me here now. And all people who awaken to freedom, that's their experience. No matter who they are, no matter whether it's a man or a woman, and it's available to everybody, every human being. That's our natural state. Nisargadatta Maharaj, who wrote the book I Am That, you probably have it in the store. His name, Nisargadatta, means the natural state. One who has awakened to the natural state. Well, questions, comments,
thank you, Jimmy.
Sharing. Yes.
I just heard a man on the radio who had gypsy ancestors. But anyway, he went and lived with the gypsies for a while.
Yes.
Through his family. And he said that in the Roma language, there is no word. The word for tomorrow and yesterday are the same word.
Is that right?
Yeah. They have a word for today. And then...
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was when you started talking about the kind of fit.
Yeah.
What you were saying.
Beautiful.
About being...
Could you repeat those three steps again for the practice?
Yes. Actually, there are four steps. I'll tell you about the four steps. The three steps are: be present with your suffering. Be present with it. Eventually, you learn to welcome it because it's showing you you're not yet free. Notice the thought or story you're telling yourself. There's always a thought or story behind suffering. No story, no suffering. You're just simply present. No, nothing going on in your mind. You're simply here. Your emotional state is always one of relaxation and ease. And then the third step, see the truth. the story, the thought comes and goes. Just like the feeling, the emotion comes and goes. That you are the awareness that is always present. So breathe and be the aware being you are in this very moment. And the fourth step, as you get freer, you begin to inquire into this, well, who am I anyway? Who is this me? Who am I? And that's the fourth step. And I write about that in the book, in this chapter titled Confronting the Me. And eventually you discover that the me, the I, is a story too. It's no more real than any other thought. Eventually you see that nothing between your ears is real. Nothing. The only thing that is real is what is here right now. Awareness, beingness, presence, this is reality. And we have thoughts, we have stories, and we use the mind to create with. Every human thing, every man-made thing, there's books, these bookstores, there's books, teas, bookshelves, chairs, everything was created by an idea in somebody's mind. So the mind is very powerful. My book was created by an idea in my mind. It's only a story. It's only a story about how to get free of your story.
So, Jim, what is the place of, let's say, happy memories? Something, you know, the birth of your son.
Yeah.
Any wonderful thing that's happened to us through our past. What do we do with those? How does that fit into this?
You just have them. You can indulge them once in a while, a happy memory, a pleasant memory. But there are any memories. So maybe we talk about, we get together an old friend and talk about something that happened 2 years ago, which is a fun time. And then we talk about it, and then we breathe and relax and just be present with each other. So we're always meeting in a place of presence. In the workshop tomorrow, we'll do this exercise where we're eye-gazing. We'll sit opposite each other, and we practice just being with one another through the eyes. I call it meeting each other without fear. Because, and the freer you are, the more easy it is for you to meet others without fear. And ultimately, that's the goal, to live without fear. And the goal can be experienced right now, at least within you. If you do the work of awakening and freeing yourself from your thoughts and stories, all your thoughts and stories, you'll come to a place of fearlessness, and you'll no longer be afraid of anything. Maybe you'll have some certain residual fears about physical survival. When I was having the strokes, after the third stroke, I was in the hospital at University of California, San Francisco, at the emergency room. I was lying on the gurney. I just had the third stroke, and I couldn't move the right side of my face, and I felt really out of it, and this doctor came by, a radiologist, and said, listen, I'm going to do an angiogram. I'm going to go up through your groin with a catheter, and we're going to inject a dye into your brain, and I'm going to have the video camera, and we will, if we find a blocked artery, then we can do it, or put a stent in there to open it up. But you've got to sign this waiver. I said, what does it say? He said, well, it says you acknowledge that there's a 25% risk factor of having a major stroke or of dying. And suddenly this contraction of fear just gripped my body. And then I breathe and relax and came back to my own way of being. And I signed on the dotted line. And I just... And as it turned out, he didn't make any intervention. I do two blocked arteries, but they're too deep to do anything about. So I'm still here. But for all intents and purposes, you awaken, you become free of fear of everything. And then you can really live and do what you want, your passion. Phil.
So if someone is winning at life, you know, they're successful, they're an attractive woman, they've got life pretty well dialed, they're feeling pretty good about things, and how does that person take that step into, I'm not my story, I'm not all this investment, I'm not everything I worked for, you know, I'm something else. How does someone do that, and what is the payoff? What is the what's the cheese at the end of that tunnel for them?
Okay, good.
If they take that plunge.
Good question. Well, the freer you become, the more you realize that you're here to serve others. So you begin to find ways to serve others. Like I serve people by sharing the message of awakening. And I charge for my services, but I also offer them pro bono. Basically, it's like, if you can't afford it but you want it, how much can you pay? Because I need to make a living. Maybe I'll one day make enough money that I can totally give the teachings away. But service. You become aware of your true, you become aware of your oneness with humanity, and you want to do something about serving that oneness, contributing to humanity in whatever way you do. That's the next step, and that's the last step. To put it another way, you leave the world a little better place than when you found it.
First, I'd like to address the wanting to contribute to humanity, which I find is narrow.
Narrow?
Narrow. You know, I need a wish to contribute to all of life, kind of like the bird you mentioned.
Yes.
All of it. But it's all inclusive and all one.
Sure.
But there's something else that I want to share with you and hear your comment on, okay? So the procedure that I seem to be evolving to is... when disturbed, or when aware that I'm in a state of some kind of turbulence or upset, is to turn to the sensations, in my case, in my lips, and then to sense the breathing. And to the degree I can stay in touch with that, I seem to break the circuitry of the mind process, which is reactive to whatever is going on. That I find, if I give attention to the more, that is like a circuitry. When I'm in that, I'm hopeless, totally lost in it. To that degree, that seems to be a purification process for me. And so the emotions, the emotional upsets that I've been experiencing are diminishing, without me attempting to sort of consciously trying to do that, but simply relying on, basically on the presence. And how this plays into what you're proposing here.
It's the same thing. I'm just proposing being very present with everything. The more present you are, the more your life flows. I had a client say to me once, when I'm present, there's no problem. when people get caught up in their stories, their scenarios for the future, the fear about the future, how am I going to pay the rent? How am I going to pay this? What am I going to do about that? Or the regret about the past, guilt about the past, shame about the past. This is what keeps us from being present. So presence, yes. That's the key. Yes.
So if you have a story, you are of necessity in some time, either before or after the moment that you're actually in. You can't possibly be having a story that's telling you about where you are right now.
Yes. I didn't quite understand the question.
If you're telling yourself a story, you're telling yourself something other than the situation actually
right.
is, and you put yourself somewhere else.
Yes.
In either time,
right.
you know,
beautiful.
Time before or after your actual
right.
experience.
Right. That's right. We're just here now.
We gotta go now.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Love you.
I can see you. Hi. What's your name?
My name?
Yes.
Chandasan.
How do you spell that?
Chandthasone.
What national is that?
Lao.
Lao, uh-huh. Very pretty.
Thank you.
So what's your story?
I don't have a story.
You are free of stories?
Yes. I tell stories.
Yeah.
Stories of ancestors.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah, I say in the book that the freer we are of our story, the better storyteller we are. Because now we know we're not our stories. So we can use stories to as teaching tools, as lessons, as an inspiration. Yeah.
You talk in the book about the process of discovering your unconscious stories, the ones that
yes, I do.
You don't know why it is,
right.
or not quite present sometimes.
Right. It's a matter of, you really got to face yourself. You really got to face yourself with a rigorous honesty to look at how and why what your suffering is about, if you want to be free of it. And that's what most people don't do. Most people just kind of look outward. They never look within deeply. But the key to freedom is to look within. This friend I have in L.A., he hosts a conference and he has a 3x5 business card. And said on the front something like, the secret of transformation is, and you open it up and you saw a mirror. So it's you. The secret of transformation is you. It's all about looking within and discovering who and what you really are and not stopping at any conceptual answers, but looking deeply and deeply into yourself. What am I fundamentally? And eventually you'll come to the realization that what you are fundamentally in your essence is pure consciousness, pure awareness, pure vibration. Pure being. That's what you are. Manifesting in this body, mind, personality called you. And once you know yourself as pure being, you're free. And then you realize, wow, everybody else is pure being too. We're all pure being. We're all expressions of the oneness of life. Yeah.
So what do you do when you encounter somebody that's very caught up in a negative story of their own, and somehow it impinges on you?
Right, good question. Well, how does it impinge on you? Give me an example.
Well, let's say someone is feeling extremely negative about some aspect in their life.
Yes.
And they spend time with you, and you're in this negativity with them.
All right.
And it's not your negativity, it's theirs, but yet you can't help but pick this up.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, so you're going to get that vibration. Yeah. And so what do you do with that?
Good. Well, I'm in the business of encountering people's negative stories, but somehow they lose their charge when they're around me, because I'm just present with them in a place of pure awareness. Tell me your story of suffering. And they started to tell it. And now sometimes it's a particularly powerful story, and particularly with somebody who's intimate, like your son, my son, or my ex-wife, they can tell a compelling story, and I almost find myself believing their story too. But the fact is, no stories are true. The only thing that is real, the only thing that's true, is what is here right now. Now, the story they're telling themselves about this negative thing that happened in their lives and creating negative reactions in the body, that's very real temporarily. It's relatively real. It's what I call the small r real. But the big r real is what we are, pure consciousness. So as you realize your true nature is pure consciousness more and more and more, you emanate that more. You put out this vibe. You just naturally emanate this vibe of relaxed, aware, clear presence. And then people have their negative story, and they're caught up in their story, and you just calmly wait patiently until they're done telling their story. And you may say something like, "Oh, really?" Or whatever. And you, yes.
I heard a good one. A lady was an orphan and grew up as an orphan. And she was now an adult and felt unloved and unworthy. And how does someone who grows up in difficult circumstances, who feels beat up on by life, tell themselves they're not their story and emerge a butterfly, you know, and realize they are loved? How do they get past, "I'm not loved, and I've been kicked around by life"?
Okay, that's a good question. And that's a common situation. Many people, I'm sure some in this room, have been kicked around by life and have been abandoned as kids or unloved.
Alcoholic father.
Yeah, alcoholic father. My aunt said once, Jimmy grew up in a war zone. My parents were in battle with each other, fueled by alcohol, and I guess I did grow up in a war zone. But the fact is, our true nature always is pure consciousness. That's why it's a story about one of the Buddhas, or when somebody who's famous figure in India had assassinated 1,000 people, had killed 1,000 people, and then he got enlightened. So he went from darkness into light. So the woman who has been unloved, when she hears the teaching of freedom, maybe she'll pick up my book or some other book that's about freedom, and she begins to look within and examine her story and see how that she's had this whole story, this history, or her story of abuse and no love, orphanages. But as she begins to do the practice, become more present, She begins to realize that her true nature is love. Part of our true nature, part of this oneness experience, is that we are love. That's our true nature. That's an unconditional love. It's an unconditional love. It depends on no conditions, no circumstances. In my chapter in the book, The Power of Love, that's what I talk about. And the more you know yourself as love, the more you realize that you are infinite love, the more you realize that that's what you have to give people, love. Hey, Dennis. Yes.
So would you say there's, with your philosophy, there's any responsibility for other people? For example, if you have come to this place of
freedom,
calmness and centeredness and really self-love, do you feel some pull to share that? I don't mean you personally. I mean with every human being. What would it be like if every human being were to share a center of love with every other human being, even people who have not had love such as this orphan or any other person,
right,
would have a sense of being loved.
Yes.
But that sense of being loved isn't only coming from them, it's coming from others who are also giving them this universal love. And it would seem to me there's a place for that also, besides this, our own self.
Yes, yeah. That's what happens. When you realize your true nature and you are love, then you want to give it out. You want to connect with others. You want to share it with others. And love gives endlessly because it's an endless flow. It's an endless flow of love. There's no end to it.
Would you say that's one of the... I don't want to use the word goal, but would you say that's kind of like a goal?
Yeah, sure. We can use the word goal. To realize our true nature and love people. There's nothing else to do other than love people. I do my work. That's my primary goal, is doing my work. This is my work, teaching, sharing with people. And then my son, he needs some guidance right now. And so my other project is my son. He needs some tough love guidance. And who knows what I'll love next. I don't know. But I'm just sharing my love with people. As I say in the book, in the last chapter, I talk about my stroke some more and the result of that, and I'm just grateful to be still here, being able to share my love and wisdom with people. And my teacher, my guide on the journey, Jean Klein, whose books are in the window too, he died in 1998 at the age of 86. He said that the predominant emotion of an awakened person is gratitude. Just gratitude for the gift of being here. And Rumi, I have begun my book with this quote by Rumi. Whoever enters the way without a guide will take 100 years to travel a 2-day journey. Whoever enters the way without a guide will take 100 years to travel a 2-day journey. So I wrote this book as a guide. So if you read this book, you can do it in 2 days rather than 100 years. And actually, it takes about 2 years. If you apply this teaching and really work with it, every time you have suffering, every time your buttons are pushed, I promise you, within 2 years, maybe not be totally free, but you'll be free enough that you'll now know that you're totally okay and that need no other guidance. Whenever you get in trouble, you can just be present, pull on your own resources, and it's gone. Yes.
One thing that I'm feeling a little confused about is,
okay, good, confusion's good.
Boundaries.
Okay.
So some part of me feels like if I feel like I need to set boundaries, then I'm not accepting the way things are. I'm trying to control them. And so, but I feel the need to control them.
Right.
And I feel so, but I know boundaries are also healthy.
Yes.
I'm not quite sure where that all fits in. So I lay a trip on myself with boundaries a little bit. And because I have this feeling that if I was truly in the moment, then things would just kind of flow, and I would be okay with whatever happened.
Right. Well, you may be in the moment, and you may just be present, and then some guy is pawing you or something like that. You gotta, you know, hey, that's a boundary. Some guy's pawing you because he's like totally caught up in his story of whatever. Or setting boundaries with children. That's important. As a parent, children need structure. They need direction. They need boundaries. So you set up boundaries for your children. So boundaries have a place. But the more you know yourself as the awareness that behind the boundaries, then you can, the more you'll know when a boundary is important and when it's not. A question? Alan? How you doing?
Good.
Good to see you. How are we doing for time?
It's 25 to 9.
Why don't we do a little exercise? Find a partner and sit and face them. Okay, sit facing your partner. Yes. We'll give you a taste of good, take some space in the room. In the room, yes, take some space.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so just close your eyes, breathe deeply, and come into your own being. Just be aware of yourself, sitting here now. Breathe deeply. Notice your breathing, how it flows in and out, flows out. Notice the sensations and feelings in your body, how they come and they go, all with the breath, all with the awareness you are. Notice the sounds in the room, how they come and go too, the sound of my voice, sound of traffic, sound of people moving their chairs. All these sounds come and they go, but you are the awareness that is always present. So just breathe and relax into the awareness you are. One key phrase I use in the book is relax into being. It become a mantra for you. Relax into being. Just relax into the being you are. Now open your eyes and look at this person across from you. And just breathe and relax and just gaze at this person. And see how they're a reflection of you. The person look at you as, in their essence, the same as you. You are both one consciousness, one reality, one big R, one pure awareness, looking out through your eyes at this other person. So just behold the beauty of this person and realize that you too are that same beauty. We are one, and we are beautiful. If there's any thoughts or stories coming and going, just let them be there and come back to being itself. Your true nature is the awareness behind everything, behind your passing thoughts, behind your passing emotions, sensations, feelings. So just breathe into the awareness you are and gaze out in wonder at this other person. This other person is a reflection of you. Yes, we have different bodies, we have different appearances, we have different ages, we have different talents and gifts, and some of us speak different languages. But at our core, the essence of our being, we are one. And that's a beautiful thing to realize, your oneness with all of life. All of creation. And then close your eyes and just be with yourself. And then open your eyes one more time and now share with each other your experience of that process. Just say a few words about it.
I said, I feel like you're just very awesome. Any time too, or all that stuff she does with the animals and everything, and the plants that she has. Enters them and they enter her.
Not at all. Not at all. Subdued. I mean, I'm a bit tired of the energy.
Yeah.
Now just acknowledge each other with a touch or a handshake or a hug or something like that, and then come back to the circle, the semicircle. Anybody want to share anything? Any insight that came up for them? Do you like the process?
Well, I was surprised in a way. I found Jig very beautiful. And then I had apprehension about that. And then I noticed it was coming through my eyes. And I was saying, oh, I'm still surviving this. And then you said something about seeing the other person as a reflection of beautiful, which sort of gave allowability, increased allowability. And so then I could really see him as beautiful. And so we were both breaking down, you know, really, really, I think really released in a way of being able to smile and laugh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yes.
Simone and I have known each other for a long time, but we've been very casual friends. We just get together for walks. I know we can't occasionally share. We kind of both shared our appreciation for each other, and that we have this very sweet relationship where we don't try to fix each other. We just are there witnessing each other's lives. And most of our time spent together is in parallel. We're looking out ahead together as we walk, and we don't sit across and gaze at each other in our relationship. And it was a nice experience to just face her.
Yeah, good.
Yeah. And
I recommend that friends and couples do that occasionally. Just sit and eye gaze. Very good for couples, for developing intimacy. This is normal. People find this sometimes a very scary process. When I first learned to do eye gazing, when I was like in 1977, when I was doing the life spring training in San Francisco, I remember. And it was really scary for me. It was like people were seeing into me, and people were judging me. You feel them judging you, or that's what my story. And so I was always, that was kind of always my test for myself of freedom. And one way of seeing how free I was, how easy it was for me to engage another person through the eyes. And because when you're truly free, you can meet anyone without fear. Or as I said in another context, when you can look into anyone's eyes and see the Buddha, you are free. They might see the Buddha in themselves. They may be caught up in anxiety and fear and suffering, but you see the Buddha in them, and you are free. And so that's why I have this exercise, eye gazing at the or call it being with another person, or connecting with another person, at the end of chapter 6. At the end of every chapter, I have a practice, which is all a variation of the practice of freedom, the three-step practice. How are you doing? You.
I'm doing fine.
Good. And you? You're caught up in the story. Are you noticing you're caught up in the story?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Oh, I'm taking in what you were saying.
Beautiful. That's the. It's all about recognition. And just to know, well, you're caught up in your story. That's the beginning of freedom. So good. It's a process. As I said, if you really embrace this teaching, buy the book or read the book. Really kind of embrace it, and you will embody the teaching. You'll embody it within 2 years. Most people will be free enough. They won't be totally free, maybe, but they'll be free enough. They now know that they're okay. They have their ability or resources within them to handle anything. And that's kind of the measure of being an adult in some ways. And being an adult is being able to handle anything. You know you can handle anything. Questions?
I just make an observation.
So yes.
Like, why don't they like teach this in junior high school or something? Now we're all like, you know.
That's very good.
Older age, and then that's when we start focusing on things like this. It seems like it'd be nice to not have so many stories to sort through.
Exactly.
Started earlier.
a beautiful observation, a very good observation. In fact, I notice with people, the young people who work with me, they get this so quickly. But the older they are, the more resistant they are. I've got the guy who actually funded this book, the guy from Holland, who lent me the $10,000 that I needed to publish this book. He's 68 years old, and he has got caught up in significant stories. He's been a spiritual seeker all his life. He hasn't found freedom. And I had one Skype session with him, a webcam and Skype, and he was very deeply identified with his stories. So yes, people, the older they are, the more deep-rooted the conditioning, the programming.
We could call a program like that No Truth Left Behind instead of No Child.
Good. See, are you a teacher of some kind?
Yes.
You're a teacher?
Elementary.
Okay, good. So you you can begin in a certain subtle way, just introducing people to the idea of being present, honoring the past, keeping an eye on the future, just being right here, right now. Well, I think we're done. Thank you for your attention, your presence, your beautiful selves, and I'll see you again. And I'm here to sign books if you want to buy a book.
Buy a book.
Thank you.
Out as well that we have a donation bowl on the counter over there, and we hope you will contribute to it to help support the work of our speaker as well as the work of maintaining a space where these sorts of talks can occur.
So thank you so much for coming out tonight. And we look forward to seeing you again here at Many Rivers. And we have lots of great gifts in this season as well, including And Your Story Begin Your Life. So thanks very much for coming out.
I don't know if it's been there before,
but I haven't seen it. I can see you, Paul. I don't see you. I can see your eyes. I can see your eyes.
Yes, yes. Thank you for your presence. I appreciate your presentation. Thanks. You want to buy a book, huh?
Of course.
Now, do you have a pen? And do you have a card with your name on?
I normally would carry them with me, but I don't have a card.
We are, yes. Was,
yeah, do you have my card with my name on it? I did not bring one. Sorry.
Okay, so it's
C-H-A.
C-H-A.
N.
N.
T-H-A.
T-H-A.
S-O-N-E.
S-O-N-E. To Chantasun?
Chantasun.
Do you live in Sebastopol?
I live in San Jose. Thank you.
Thank you. You're a beautiful woman. Thank you
so much. Thank you.
Okay.
I might reclaim your
space. Well, more like
Frederick?
Restack it.
How you doing, brother?
Yeah.
Thank you. Are you going to come?
No, I went to the other one.
Right.
Well,
it's always a deepening process.
Mm.
Yeah, I probably won't have time to get any of this.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because Sunday I'm committed to seeing my ex-wife and having to see out with my son when I'm leaving when they want.
Yeah. Well, that's all
right. There's always another time.
I just think of you and I.
Yeah, there you go.
Really?
Yeah.
How are you?
Oh,
yeah.
It's been a while. I know. Yeah. I know. Yeah. Yeah, soon.
Excellent. That's what we like to hear.
The store
is like
filled
to capacity
with
stuff. Hard times. Yeah.
Not yet.
Maybe you would like to
do a consultation.
Do you
enjoy
it?
I would charge you $200.
Thank you.
That's okay. I want to do a session. Get Skype with family.
No.
By phone.
No, I don't even have high speed internet.
We could talk on the phone and you could
nice story,
do this one session and
you
free session.
Very sure.
And then you can decide.
We sell
change here.
You
can visit.
Hi, yeah.
See, I knew. So, do you have a pin?
Oh, I'm sorry, no. Do you have a check? Thanks.
Now, how do you spell Louisa?
L-U-I-Z-A.
Louisa.
Yeah, Torah maybe? I don't know. How about the Jewish world, 365 days?
Maybe you know? Which book comes for Hanukkah? Haggadah?
No, that's for...
Passover?
That's for book? There's some books on Jewish custom. Sure.
No, do you know which book they use for rituals?
There is no particular book. Like,
this
next door, right? Actually, it's in the courtyard over there, the far diagonal corner. So PG&E sticker on the
door.
Key, right?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
This
far
is the diagonal corner.
Okay. You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Somebody press the button.
Yeah, it looks like, oh no, it's still going.